know what it says in the papers this morning on RT Radio 1, but we are going to bring you a review of the farming papers with the top stories of the week. So I'm joined in studio by Aisling O'Brien, senior news journalist with AgriLand, the online farming news platform, and Margaret Donnelly, editor of The Farming Independent. And you're both very welcome into studio. And thankfully, you've been looking at the farming press for us. And I guess something that's ongoing and very topical is milk. We're probably, hopefully, all pouring it onto our cornflakes this morning. But Aisling, it's kind of, I don't want to say a crisis situation at the moment, but it's very interesting because there's been a drop in milk volumes over the last couple of years. Can you just explain what's been going on?
Yeah, perhaps not a, I suppose, a crisis, but definitely a distinct downward trajectory is what we're seeing. And the Central Statistics Office released data this week, which showed that milk supplies in June were down by over 13 million litres, actually. And on the same month last year. So actually in June of this year, there was just over a billion litres of milk brought in by milk processors and co-ops around the country. And that is, you know, quite a significant drop there of 13.3 million. It's also down 25 million litres when it's compared to June 2022, which is actually a 4.4% drop. So you are seeing that trend through the years as well. And I suppose when you look at the first 6 months of this year compared to the same period last year, we're seeing in around about a 6% drop in milk intake as well, domestic milk intake. And I think what is kind of stark about the figures as well, Hannah, is that obviously June is one of the peak months and it's an important month for dairy farmers. And when you're seeing those milk volumes go down, you know, it's different if this was, you know, November we were talking about or something like that. This is important months for dairy farmers to make money. And seeing that volume going down is a cause for concern as well. So seeing it in black and white this week.
I guess, just to explain to people as well, there's processing milk, I guess that would go into, say, cheese and infant milk formula. There's liquid milk as well in terms, and that's produced all year round. So a farmer would have to have, say, nearly two herds of cattle, one calving in the spring, one calving later in the year. So you're milking on Christmas Day. It's a little unforgiving. And those liquid milk suppliers, there's been a drop in them as well. Margaret, why do we think this is happening?
Well, Declan O'Brien actually in the Farmers Journal explains it very well behind that 13 million litre drop in June supplies. And he says it's really a combination of things. Poor weather, reduced grass growth and tight margins have all led to this.
It's just age profile? Because the average age is what, 57, 56?
Age profile is a factor for the sector, certainly. There had been talk of a dairy farmer, kind of a retirement scheme in recent years. Yeah. And I think a lot of people maybe held on hoping that would come.
Elon Musk retweeted a Farming Independent journalist because there was some sort of idea floated that there would be a dairy retirement and Elon Musk got on board. So it was a big deal,
yeah,
nationally and globally.
People were kind of expecting that and holding on, and it didn't happen. And the age profile in farming isn't good to start with, and it's not particularly good either in the dairy sector, even though it is a profitable sector. And there's just been that kind of natural fall off in numbers, both in cows and also in dairy farmers over the last number of years. And as Aisling said, if you're in liquid milk, you're looking at milking every day of the year fundamentally, and that's a massive commitment. It's not just 7 day weeks, it's 365 days a year.
And you have someone who might not want to do it as well, because I guess when you look at the incomes, say, in dairy compared to last year, compared to this year, based on, I think it was the Chagos National Farm Survey, the ICMSA came out and basically said, you know, there's 69% collapse in dairy farm incomes. The average dairy farmer was essentially earning 11 euro per hour. And that's below the minimum wage, which is 12.70 euro per hour. So if you're 57 or coming into your 60s and you are looking to retire, is the person behind you going to want to take that on if they're earning less than minimum wage? They could essentially go to a supermarket and get better paid.
A lot of those dairy farmers as well would be carrying a lot of debt as well, Hannah. And that's a consideration as well for the next generation. You know, will I be earning enough to service that debt as well that is on the farm? You know, farmers are investing hugely in maybe slurry storage capacity when it comes to complying now with nitrates changes and everything like that. So it is, I mean, it's a sector that is our big shining light, and to try and make it attractive to retain people and to attract people into the sector, it's going to be a big ask. Like, as you said, the National Milk Agency this week showing us that there's actually been a 37% drop, the Farmers Journal were reporting this week, in liquid milk suppliers in the past decade. I mean, and just even in the last year alone, there was 58 liquid milk suppliers got out of that business last year and another 49 this year. And it's actually interesting because the amount of milk that we're drinking has actually gone up last year, and we're, I think, the fifth highest per capita of milk drinkers in the world in Ireland. But it seems that that sector is under huge, huge pressure because, as you said, they might see an easier life and having that dry period, you know, over the winter months and having that break. And as you said, having to go out and milk.
It is strange, though, because you called it the shining light, and it for a long time it was called white gold, you know, and even with that collapse in incomes that we're seeing, it's still the most profitable sector in farming. So, you know, what happens to rural Ireland? But it's interesting as well in terms of, I guess, from the processor's point of view, they'll say they are responding to market demand. And I know the Farming Independent had something about that, about the China importing less milk formula or infant formula this year. But Margaret, you had an interesting point as well in terms of quotas. Like, it's not that long since quotas were lifted.
No, it'll be 10-year anniversary next April when quotas ended and dairy farmers in this country were allowed milk fundamentally as many cows as they want. And there's been very good years over the last 10 years in terms of income, certainly for dairy farmers.
2022 being a case in point, yeah. Mm.
But it's not plain sailing for the next number of years. You know, there's environmental restrictions coming in. There's the social pressure, as you say. Who wants to work 7 days a week when you can get a decently paying job that doesn't do that? And availability of land, of labour, all of those things are impacting. And where does dairy go over the next couple of years? And will it give it the returns that justify, or you getting out of the bed 7 days a week to do those long, long hours?
But it's interesting because we had then CEO of Dairy Gold, Jim Wolfe, saying, you know, where is the dairy industry going to fund all the stainless steel to process all the milk? Then this year, we have a case where Dairy Gold is cutting staff hours because they don't have enough milk. We have Lakelands, the second biggest processor in Ireland, has been cutting staff as well and said they need to fill, essentially, because the factories aren't full. It's an interesting turn of events. And I know there's a lot more to talk about, but I don't want dairy is obviously not the only show in town. Fodder is becoming a serious issue as well. And Margaret, you were in the latest, was it National Fodder meeting? So what is the story there?
Yeah, so the National Fodder and Food Security was set up back in 2022 to really look at, you know, an industry response and contingency plans about managing farm enterprises with high input prices and potential supply pressures in light of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And it's met every couple of months since then. And it met back in July and looked at where fodder supplies. And one of the key things was that up to 30% of farms have fodder deficits of 10% or more for the coming winter. Now, the big thing about fodder is it will depend on the weather. What does the next 3-4 weeks bring in terms of grass growth? Can you get a third cut of silage in and make sure you've replenished fodder stocks for the winter? Because how long will the winter be? When will you be able to get cattle back out? So Chagas and the minister, Charlie McConnell, have been very vocal on this in recent weeks about doing that fodder budget and making sure you have enough, or that you take steps now that we're not looking at a situation if we have a long winter.
Because you made a point in an editorial before as well about how many fodder schemes, emergency fodder schemes, have we had in the last, 5 years, even 6 years?
Yeah, these ad hoc schemes that come in, it's not a great reflection on the sector when that has to be. So we're trying to... the sector's trying to, you know, plan and get farmers to just plan ahead. And it's interesting when you're in that fodder meeting, you hear about the Chagas surveys of where, like, the west of Ireland, or farmers in the west, tend to be more maybe pessimistic about the weather and what stocks they might need of fodder. They tend to show up less having deficits than maybe farmers in other parts of the country.
So fingers crossed for good weather, kids going back to school and good weather. But in terms then of local stories, they're always good to reflect on. Aisling, you had a good local story. Do you want to share it there?
So I suppose going back to my old home stomping ground of the kingdom, and a link to Banksy, no less, this week of all things, because for people who might not be aware, Banksy is an anonymous, well, there's a lot of speculation about who he may be. A British artist who rose to prominence. He does these little sketches and these little kind of, I suppose, spray painted drawings on the side of buildings. And one actually turned up this week in London, and it was a goat. And of course, what's happening this week? If you're in Kerry, there's about 100,000 people who are going to descend on Killorglin for Puck Fair this week. And of course, the committee who organised Puck Fair were not going to let that opportunity pass. So they took to their social media as well. And they said that, you know, Banksy's goat painting, the Kerry's Eye was reporting, even Banksy is in on the Puck mood. The countdown is on. So Yeah, another Banksy drawing, mural, whatever you will call it, which I'm sure will make him another fortune. But the Puck Fair Committee delighted this year that Banksy has chosen a goat and a very opportune week, of course. Kicks off this morning with the horse fair. The cattle fair moved to Monday this week, okay, or this year, I should say.
So people should definitely check that out.
It's a pilgrimage. I mean, for a lot of people in Kerry, it's bigger than Christmas, Hannah. People will put it into their calendars. They will come back from abroad. You know, you might have people living in Australia or Dubai or wherever, and they'll come home for Puck. You know, Christmas mightn't be that big a thing on the calendar, but definitely for people in the Mid-Kerry area, Puck is on their calendar. It's a big, big social event.
Yeah, it is. I have fond memories of a teenager being in Puck Fair, which I won't share live on live radio. But Margaret, as well, you have a very good local story as well, related to the Guinness World Records and the Fla, which continues to delight as well.
Yeah, I certainly grew up in a house where the Guinness Book of Records made its way in via Santi every Christmas, full of facts, of useless facts, pointless facts, and just great reading. And the Wexford People this week had a great story on it. So Castlebridge in County Wexford is actually the original birthplace of the Guinness World Records. It was established by a man, Hugh Beaver, in 1951, who was the then managing director of Guinness Breweries. And out at a shooting party, there was an argument over what was the fastest game bird in Europe, and they couldn't figure out. So he decided to produce out of that a book of facts, and it was for pubs to settle arguments and do that kind of thing. And this week, the current editor-in-chief at the Guinness World Records visited Wexford to adjudicate on their attempt to get into the world records, with the most musicians playing the tin whistle continuously. So 2,500 people or so played The Boys of Wexford and The Dawning of the Day as part of the Fla Ceoil.
I remember learning that in primary school, actually, The Dawning of the Day and the tin whistle.
And, well, you should have been there, because now have a new world record from Wexford. So, but there's 57,000 or so record applications every year.
Incredible.
So so Wexford has a new one that went into the books for next year.
That's lovely. I'm not sure you might have wanted to have been there to hear it though. but thank you both for that, and stay with us, because I want you to contribute to the piece we have in planning a little bit later. But coming up after the break, we have a rescue pony that's on its way to next week's Dublin Horse Show at the RDS, and rural housing for young people.